Okay, it's really good to be here this morning, and good to see Lindsay and Jukula back with us. Lindsay, as you know, is one of our young adults who have been serving in Nigeria, but is now in Reading, where her husband, Japhet, is studying, and Micah is currently out in our children's provision somewhere, and there are no CCTV footage of him, but I'm sure he's enjoying it and getting on. Lindsay, it's great to see you. Hope you have a great Christmas. I know your family are all kind of coming from all around the world to be back this Christmas. Hope it's a special one for you with your family and with us. It's really good to see you. We are thinking about Jesus as icon over the next couple of weeks. That's the series that we've been in. The writer to the Hebrews said that Jesus is the exact representation of God's being, the radiance of God's glory. He's saying, you want to know what God is like? Look at Jesus. There is evidence of God's character really clearly in the life of Jesus. To help us do that, this morning we're going to think about Jesus as King, and we're going to read together from Matthew chapter 2. You can follow along as the words will be on the screen. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Christ was to be born. "In Bethlehem, in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will be the shepherd of my people Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and make a careful search for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." After they heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen in the east went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming into the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. And they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold and of incense and of myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. We end there giving thanks to God for his word to us, how he speaks to us today. I was in the car this week listening to the radio, and it was a Chris Martin song, Coldplay, that I heard, and he was singing at the time that, "Oh, when you're still waiting for the snow to fall, it doesn't really feel like Christmas at all." That's what he was singing. I looked out the window and there was snow all around. Like, it does actually feel quite Christmassy, you know? But I wonder what it is that makes it feel like Christmas for you. The song goes on to describe his relationship breakup. He's had a fight on Christmas night, and the person that he has had the fight with is gone. And he's wondering, what's happening here? Where is my life going? It doesn't really feel like Christmas at all. The big idea or theme of the song is that pain or uncertainty of any kind doesn't resonate with Christmas. That he doesn't find any connection with discomfort or uncertainty and the Christmas season. It's a sentiment that many of us resonate with, isn't it? You know, when things are bad, when stuff goes wrong, when there's a threat regarding job or health, or when there's grief, we're saying, it seems so much worse because of the time of year, because it's Christmas. It feels like it doesn't fit, like our circumstances are difficult or uncertain, and it feels like it doesn't fit. If there's family tension of any kind, we're thinking, this is not how it was intended to be. It seems inappropriate circumstances for December when things are hard. We always feel like, oh, it's such a shame for things to be like this in December. It seems worse. We have an expectation of what Christmas should be like in our minds and in our heads. And when it doesn't match up, then there's like added disappointment. We have tradition an expectation around this time that probably heightens our disappointment when things don't unfold the way we want them to. I was 15 years old when my eldest sister got married. And then I remember like the first Christmas, I was anticipating like, oh my goodness, my sister's not going to be around for Christmas. She might be with her in-laws. This is awful. She's probably thinking the same thing. Like, who wants to be with her in-laws at Christmas, eh? And I was thinking, no, this is not how I anticipated Christmas was going to be. This is not my expectation, because at Christmas time, Pamela and Gillian and Michael sit around the table, and it's that my expectation of Christmas as a 15-year-old was going to be interrupted because of new circumstances. Like, it's not okay. It doesn't feel like Christmas at all if Pamela's not going to be here. We're all threatened, aren't we, by things interrupting our plans, our ideas. Maybe you've heard the dreaded words, "Mommy, can I help you decorate the Christmas tree?" Do not touch the Christmas tree under any circumstance. You have a vision in your mind of what it's going to look like, and you're not going to be assisted by a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old. They're going to make it worse. And so you feel threatened. It doesn't feel like Christmas. What has to happen for it to feel like Christmas? What temperature does it have to drop to? How many brie and cranberry parcels do you need to eat in order to feel like, yeah, it's Christmas now, and I've got mulled wine, there's an aroma of mulled wine. And you get Frank Sinatra in the background or Bing Crosby. I don't know what needs to happen for it to click in your mind, for it to be like, oh yes, I feel Christmassy. No, that's an actual phrase, I feel Christmassy. What is that like? What happens? The event that we're supposed to be celebrating is full of disruption. The thing that we're supposed to be meditating on and thinking about is full of disruption. It's littered with interruptions. Mary was expecting, but she wasn't expecting to be expecting. That's what was happening. Joseph wasn't expecting to be in the situation that he found himself in. The shepherds were just doing their job. The Magi, they're stargazers, astrologers. They're just like looking at stars, and then there's this star that is strange, appears different to them, takes them from where they were to another place. It's full of interruption. It's full of disruption. This story is all about disruption. The stargazers go to a foreign land. They find themselves before a bloodthirsty king who has a reputation for wiping out anybody who crosses his path. Terrifying experience for the Magi. Distracted from their task and in uncertain territory. Disrupted at their work and thrown into chaos. That's Christmas. For most of the characters caught up in the original Christmas story, if we were to bring them along to experience our idyllic Christmas, if we were to bring them around our lunch table or our Christmas experience at Belfast Christmas Market or whatever else, you know, they'd be saying, it doesn't really feel like Christmas at all, because the two experiences are vastly different. The first one was disruptive. The first one was painful, scary, inconvenient, embarrassing for Joseph, intimidating, nerve-wracking for the Magi as they walk, you know, on tiptoes into this uncertain experience, thinking, what lies ahead of us? We've never seen a star like this before. We've never seen light like this before. What lies ahead of us? We read in Matthew chapter 2 that even the most powerful man of the times was disturbed. Herod was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. Christmas for the disturbed. Christmas is about people being disturbed. The season was never intended to be one that reinforced our control over our lives. The first Christmas was not about people feeling like, yes, I'm in control of everything. I've got everything in order for Christmas. Are you all set for Christmas? They asked Mary. No, not even close. Joseph, what about you? You all set for Christmas? You all set? Like, what is going on? None of the people in this original story were all set for Christmas. Their lives were disrupted. They weren't prepared for what was going on. This story told properly must grab the attention of a disrupted world, of a disturbed world, because it's good news to disrupted people. It's good news to people who are disturbed, who are troubled, who are anxious, who are nervous. To people who are sitting with a situation on their plate thinking, I wasn't expecting this. I wasn't expecting that. The message of Christmas is good news to disturbed people. Disturbed people should read the story of Christmas and think about their own circumstances and maybe find themselves singing, it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas in my life because things are not as they should be. The first visitors to arrive to greet this child and to bring gifts are magi, foreign astrologers. If you think about that for a minute, I was trying to think about having a newborn in the house. I know it's kind of a familiar experience for you guys, but I was thinking back, you know, Rose is 2, Robbie's 5, James is 7. I was thinking about, you know, like having the first child, you know, what it was like having James in the house as a baby. And imagining me going, like trying to imagine a scenario when I went to the doorbell rings and Rachel's in the living room with a newborn. I open the door and she shouts out to me, who is it? Like, is it Green Thumb? Is it the window cleaner? You know, is it somebody trying to sell PVC windows? Like, is that, who's at the door? And I say, it's Arabian magicians and they've got some presents for James. Like, oh, bring them in. Can you imagine? Arabian, like foreign Arabian magicians who specialize in the dark arts are the first people to bring gifts. Like, when a newborn comes into your house, it exposes all your weakness. All your incompetency is out there. Everybody knows you haven't got a clue what you're doing. And you feel at your lowest point and your weakest because they're so small and little, but they just disrupt everything about you. And you are probably at your worst when you're trying to, for the first time anyway, deal with a newborn. And these Arabian astrologers arrive with gifts. You would expect the religious elite to be there. You would expect it to be the religious elite who knew the coordinates of the Messiah's birth, who knew where he was to be born, who knew when he was to be born, who knew the scriptures back to front and inside out. They had all the prophecies, they had all the knowledge, but they were unmoved by it. They didn't move. They didn't go to worship the baby. They were able to give information about it, but it hadn't transformed their lives. They were so well prepared for the birth that they could quote the coordinates of where the child was to be born and tell other people, this is where the baby will be, this is where the Messiah will be, this is where the king will be, but they did not go themselves. Prophecies pinpointed the location of the Messiah's birth, pinpointed where he would be, basically said, here's the delivery suite for the Messiah. If you go there, you will find him. In Bethlehem in Judea, they replied, for this is what the prophet has written, you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will be the shepherd of my people, Israel. The chief priests had the information. Teachers of the law had the information, but it was the magi who were moved by the information. It was the magi who were moved, who acted, who worshipped. Those who were familiar with the Christmas story in their minds slept through Christmas. Can you imagine going to sleep on Christmas Eve with a tin of Quality Street beside you, watching something that's been on TV 17 times before every other Christmas, right? And you fall asleep on Christmas Eve, and the next time you get awakened, it's Boxing Day. Someone just says, awaken, waking up. You're like, well, you slept through Christmas. What? Slept through it, the turkey, the ham, the Brussels sprouts. Some of you don't mind that, but you slept through Christmas. That's what happens here. These religious leaders switched off. They had it all in their minds, but they missed it. They missed Christmas. Can you imagine being delayed at an airport, hoping to get home for Christmas, but being delayed and you don't get home and you missed it. The chief priests missed Christmas. We've become so familiar with the nativity scene that we expect the wise men to be there. We expect there to be gold, frankincense, and myrrh. We expect there to be dressing gowns and tea towels in the nativity story. We assume, oh yes, of course the wise men were there, but at the first Christmas, nobody expected the wise men to be there. Nobody expected the Magi to be there. They were outsiders. They were foreigners. They were astrologers. They were a bit weird. And they get swept into this story, but we're forgetting that these are pagans. These are people who were disobedient to what the Old Testament had instructed about stars and astrology and predicting the future and all that kind of stuff. Old Testament lawbreakers are being swept into the story of God. Somebody put it this way, you know, Gandalf and Dumbledore have come to worship the baby. Strangers, weird, wizards. The wizards have come to worship. Like Richard Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens, you know. Russell Grant have come to church. It sounds like the start of a joke. It's like atheists are coming to worship. That's what's going on here. Their lives have been so disrupted. This was not to be expected. This was not anticipated. Matthew introduces us to the mind-blowing reality that pagans have come to worship. People who were preoccupied with dark supernatural activity have bowed the knee to Jesus Christ. This was interruption. This was disruption to the normal pattern of things, and this is what the Christmas story is all about. This should give us hope as Christian people in the church as we look outside, as we look around and think, how on earth could my work colleague come to faith in Jesus Christ? How on earth could my wife or husband come to faith in Jesus Christ? How on earth could my son come to know Jesus? What about that guy on my sports team? How would that happen? Do you know that person who just gets drunk in different places every weekend and then comes into work on the Monday and talks about it? It's like it's just the same story. You were with the same people in a different place getting drunk and you thought it was great. You can't remember it and you're talking about it and you're building up to the next week to do it again. You're wasting your money. You're wasting your life and you're thinking that person's a million miles away from coming to faith. No, they're not. Because it's not about their behavior. It's not about their power. Not about their ability to turn their lives around. It's about God and he's everywhere. He's sweeping pagan astrologers familiar with the dark arts into the Christmas story so much so that we think, of course the Magi are there. We think they're perfect for this scene. But they were once strangers and far away. And do you know what the truth is for every single Christian? So were you and I. None of us have any entitlement or right to be here. We were strangers, aliens, far away from the grace of God, and he swept us in. If he can do it for you, if he can do it for me, if he can do it for the Magi, he can do it for anyone. And we should have hope this Christmas for the people who are currently outside the walls, outside the faith, outside the community, outside the church. God is able to sweep them into the story, to work in creation, to work around them, to disrupt them and interrupt them wherever they are, whatever they're doing. Our lives should be full of hope for people who don't yet know Jesus, that they would bow the knee to him. That's what happens in the Christmas story. People are disrupted and they worship him. Do you know anybody who needs a shepherd? Do you know anybody who is harassed and helpless, wandering, lost? Do you know anybody who has so much need in their life that they can't help themselves, they can't fix themselves, they can't dig their way out of it? Mentally exhausted, physically tired. Do you know anybody who just doesn't have the resources to meet their current situation? They need a good shepherd. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. That's my faith. That's not my boast because I am great. I have a shepherd who enables me not to want. He's capable of sustaining me through everything this world will throw at me. He's even capable of sustaining me in death. He's our only hope in life and death. We all know people like that because everyone is like that. We all need a savior. We all need a loving king. Why not invite these people that you know to your Christmas services? I've said there's so many of them. You invite them along on a Wednesday night to Central. Brilliant opportunity. Say, this is happening in the city. It's never happened before. I don't even know what it's going to be like. You can kind of blame shift if it's not like great. You say, well, I didn't know it was going to be like. I haven't done it before. It's Dave Dickinson's fault, right? It's a brilliant opportunity. People go to the city all the time. It's one of the main reasons why we're doing it, because people gravitate to the city. Wednesday night, 7:30 in Redeemer Central, Donegal Street. Let's go to a carol service. I think there's an openness at Christmas time. It's not as threatening as going to church at normal times of the year. People want to sing carols. You bring them along there, they get swept into the story. Could you say, do you want to grab a bite to eat after work and we'll go to the carol service? Or what about next Saturday night? Are you doing it? I know it's close to Christmas. Are you doing anything? My church does this carol service on the 23rd, Saturday night. I've never done it before. We usually do it on a Sunday. We're doing a Saturday this time. Do you come with me? My church has a Christmas Eve service, 11:15. What are you doing on Christmas Eve? You have kids. You want to bring your kids to our all-age service? It's brilliant. It's designed for kids. It's brilliant. Just invite them along, and who knows what may happen. You get their lives interrupted this Christmas time. You know, I was 20 years old, just finished a relationship with my girlfriend, 20 years old. And I was at university, and someone invited me along to the Christian Union residential weekend, a preterm weekend. And I'd been about church. I grew up. I'd made commitments before, and I was involved in the CU. I went along to the Christian Union on a Thursday night, but I went along to Kelly's on a Wednesday night, and I just fitted in that environment as well. Out clubbing, fine. With the Christian Union, fine. I was living two lives, and someone invited me along when that relationship finished. I had more time, and they said, we want to come to the Christian Union preterm weekend. I went to the weekend, and a guy spoke on Romans 12, saying, do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. I urge you, in view of God's mercy, offer your life as a living sacrifice. And I thought, I want to do that. Someone just invited me. And my life was transformed. I was disturbed. I was disrupted in the pattern of my normal walking, of my normal life, because someone invited me. You could do that. You can invite someone here. We'd love you to do that. In this story, people aren't just disrupted, but there's a diversion as well. We discover that the promised king doesn't just cause disruption. He brings about a diversion. The Magi present their gifts. They come and they give the gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And then it says this, having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they return to their country by another route. Now, that's a terrifying verse for Protestants in Northern Ireland to read, isn't it? They went home by another route, not their traditional route, another route. They went home another way. What? But we always go this way. This is the way back. This is what we always do. Christmas tradition disrupted. There's a diversion in the story, and their lives go differently. They go home differently, having met with Jesus. That's the whole point. Our lives are supposed to be different as a result of worship with him. We go home another way. An encounter with Jesus will bring about change. Will bring about change in your life and in your heart. We're not supposed to be tied to a former way of doing things. We're not supposed to be tied to traditions and patterns. We're supposed to follow Jesus, to live differently, to be diverted off the course that we had planned for our lives. Paul tells the Ephesians to live a life worthy of the calling they've received. You know, live differently. To walk a new way. To go home differently. And we read in Acts chapter 4, verse 13, about the religious leaders when they saw Peter, James, and John. When they heard their speech, remember? Peter was the one who ran away from even acknowledging Jesus. He denied knowing him. But after the resurrection, Peter had real courage because he knew that Jesus was true. He knew he was who he said he was. And the religious leaders acknowledged it. They said, when they saw the courage of Peter and John and realized that they were unschooled, ordinary men, they took note that these men had been with Jesus. They were astonished by Peter and John because they were different now. An encounter with Jesus had changed their lives and they walked differently. Still waiting for the snow to fall, and it doesn't really feel like Christmas at all. What is it? What is the thing that you're waiting for it to feel like Christmas? What is the essential ingredient that you think is necessary for Christmas to be Christmas? For your life to really count, for your life to really matter. Maybe it's not just about Christmas. Maybe you're thinking, you're not waiting for the snow to fall, but you're waiting for the job to come up. You're waiting for the right partner to come up. You're waiting for, I know, you're waiting for some experience for life to feel like your life. And you feel like, I don't have it right now, and until I get this, then my life doesn't count. Who guaranteed snow? Who guaranteed that you would get that job? Who guaranteed that you would get a partner? Who guaranteed any of this stuff to make Christmas, Christmas, or your life a real life? What power have you got to bring about your dreams? What power have you got to bring about your longings? What ability do you have to bring these things about? Could it be that your dream of family is actually ruining your present experience of family? You can't appreciate what's before you because you have this idea in your mind of what family should be like, and you're currently in a situation where family doesn't measure up. Could it be that your dream job is actually ruining your present experience of being in employment because you can't be satisfied with what God has given you, and you're complaining about your situation, and you're creating problems all around you because you can't be content with what God has blessed you with in these days? Could it be that your dream of community is actually killing the community apart that you're a part of because you're just complaining about it all the time? Could it be that your dream home is actually crushing your ability to appreciate the actual home that you're living in? Because you're thinking, for life to count, I need to have this. I need to be this way. I need to be up here, and you're down here, and you're thinking, if only, if only, if only. Michael Horton has written a brilliant book for Christians called Ordinary, and he says this: sometimes chasing your dreams can be easier than just being who you are, where God has placed you, with the gifts he has given you. Just be who you are. Be present. Acknowledge and accept your circumstances, and trust God in the middle of them. I was looking at Christmas decorations earlier in December, and on the B&Q website, this advert came up, and it said, deck the halls your way. And I thought, fat chance, do you know my wife, right? Not a mission. I get to bring the boxes out of the garage. That's my role in the Christmas decoration like setup. Deck the halls your way. That's a message of our culture. Drive a Hyundai, and it says that the slogan for Hyundai is, drive your way. You go to Burger King, and it says, have it your way. Eating Subway, and it's like, we have exactly what you want when you want it. Eat your way. You get 324 million television channels so that you can have your own channel to select. We want our lives our way, and you know what? Having life our way makes us miserable. Life God's way is what brings us joy and happiness and peace. We need to trust his way, not ours. For your life to count, for my life to count, for your life to be full and my life to be full, we need to surrender to his way, not have it our way. Being a Christian is confessing that we are not king of our lives, that there is one king who is worthy of worship, that there is one king that we should bow the knee to. He's a shepherd king who tends us, tends to us and leads us, cares for us, looks after us and lays down his life for us. In the garden, Jesus prayed, not my will, but yours be done. He surrendered his will, his way to the Father who knows best. And that's what we need to do. Accept the disruptions and follow the diversion that takes us on the course that God has for us. Do you know Jesus this morning? Are you in a relationship with him? Are you following the diversion that he's taking you on? Are you acknowledging his ways? Lean not in your own understanding. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not in your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. That's a promise of Scripture from Proverbs. Not our way, his way. In a moment, I'm going to give you an opportunity just to pray and respond, to walk out of here and to go home differently, to go home another route because of your trust in Jesus. Because your ability to live in your present circumstances, though they are not idyllic, to acknowledge that they're given by God, and in them there is an opportunity to honor him. I'm going to give you an opportunity to do that in just a moment as we pray. But first of all, we're going to receive our offering this morning.